fool! At the time, I did manage to summon a communication spirit without even suspecting that it existed. So perhaps the same could be done for restoration. At least, in theory. Are you going to sit around all day? Ants in the Pants hurried me along. My scrolls will soon run out. My mana's at zero, and Anastaria is still outside the glade. Hurry up! Anastaria is alive? Ah, I'm being slow now. She was shielded under a bubble. But then why isn't she back in the glade? I just don't get it. I quickly have to get back to normal, but how do I do that when my head is throbbing like a locomotive and the driver keeps pulling the whistle? Practically every second. What did the guardian say? No one can cause you harm in this glade? When I'm back on my feet, I'll go over to that block of wood and politely ask it why the heck I ended up with a ton of debuffs. I'd like to see it get out of that one, the unfeeling log. Man! Ants in the Pants' voice once again broke through my staggered thinking. Do something already! Do something? What is she on about? I was heading to the Guardian. Anastaria! She's dying, and I'm sitting here dawdling, getting all ready to chop down the Guardian. With some effort of will, I forced myself to concentrate, enter the spirit summoning mode, free up an active slot, and start a summons. I needed the spirit of full restoration, the one that would restore not only myself, but other players too. So, where can you be hiding? What's taking so long? A few minutes of summoning finally allowed me to find the right spirit, which led to the immediate removal of all my debuffs. Looks like a pretty useful thing, this full restoration. It doesn't affect hit points, since healing deals with that, but it does return a player to his initial state. It removes curses, debuffs, and poison. This spirit can be summoned if you're stunned, but, if I understood the description correctly, under such conditions, the next summons would only be possible in 24 hours. This means that Ants in the Pants had first restored herself, dispelled those debuffs from me, which could be dispelled with normal cleansing, shook me awake, and forced me to learn restoration. I'll have to have a thorough chat with this girl. How come she was so sure that shamans are able to work with spirits this way, without any teachers? All this is rather unorthodox. And in general, chatting with her would be very helpful in order to find out more about my class. Yeah, I got a little held up. What's up with Anastaria? The girl's frame indicated that her hit points were on a steady journey towards zero. Ants in the Pants took turns in using her healing scrolls and spirit summoning, trying not to waste mana, but she was unable to remove all the debuffs from Anastaria. And Stacy had, I selected the girl and whistled, there were 32 debuffs on the cursed Anastaria. Wow! They managed to land a curse on her, too! It wouldn't be for long, of course, just until the first respawn, but the very fact that you could curse such a high-level player, if my memory didn't fail me, it could only be done by someone with double her number of levels. Anastaria was currently at level 331, therefore she was cursed by someone who was at least level 662. If you took into account that even emperors were only level 500, I was liking what was happening less and less. Take all the debuffs off her. Once again, Ants in the Pants brought me back to reality. Perhaps I have a concussion, and that's why I keep freezing. That's the last thing I need. My mana and scrolls are running out. Get a move on already. Stacy! I couldn't help shouting as I took all the debuffs off Anastaria, and instead of running for the glade, she fell to the ground like a broken doll. It was only now that I noticed that summoning the Restoration Spirit takes 40% hit points off me. That was almost a half of what I had, and without so much as a warning. I immediately summoned a healing on myself, solemnly promising to finally put together an altar and make a sacrifice to the spirits, and, without thinking of the danger, ran to the place where Anastaria had just been standing. The phantom players were no longer around. By the looks of it, they had not been permitted to depart until the local lord, or whatever we were supposed to call him, had said everything he had to say. But as soon as he did, they were free. "Some place you found to have a nap." I jumped to Anastaria and tried to lift her, but she sagged in my arms like a dead weight.
"So I have."
The girl tried to smile, but instead her face put on a strange expression of bared teeth.
"Don't keep me here. Let me respawn."
"Yeah, right. Like I'd lose the pleasure of being in your company for 6 hours with practically no one else around. I'd be the laughingstock of Barleona's entire male population."
"Man, what happened? Why hasn't she come to herself yet? I have only enough mana for 2 more summonings, and I'm out of scrolls,"
came a shout from Ants in the Pantsa.
"Man, I give you my word that we'll definitely meet later, one-on-one. But now, please, let me go."
Anastaria tried to get up by leaning on the ground, but the arm of her gaming avatar broke with a quiet crack as if it was made of glass. Uh-oh. The avatar could only break in one case, if a quest or a scenario demands it. I sat right down in the mist and carefully put Anastaria's head in my lap. Lifting and dragging her to the glade wouldn't work. She'd break completely, but leaving her here on her own, I just couldn't do it. You can't leave a girl in distress like that. So all I could do was sit and wrinkle my brow at the unpleasant feeling I got from this new version of Anastaria. For some reason, her skin had darkened, had become slimy to the touch and constantly bubbled. I shuddered to think what would happen if I ended up with skin like that. It was a good thing that she was just an ordinary player. This looked painful.
"Stacy, what happened? Do you think we won't make it? So help us, we'll get you back on your feet in no time. So what if you've turned to crystal? I'm sure you've been through worse in your time." "Turn to crystal? It hurts!"
The girl screamed so loud the entire forest seemed to hear.
"My senses have been turned on by 30%. Can't you see what's happening to me? Let me die. I can't even leave the game right now. If I do, I'll return to the same cursed body. I must go through respawn."
Ants in the Pantsa froze in the middle of summoning another healing spirit. I was so shocked by this news that I didn't even notice that the hit points of the Lady Paladin had run out and her gaming avatar flickered, then disappeared. I hoped that at least now she could leave the capsule and scream all the pain out of herself, or get drunk to forget the feelings of the curse. To go through what she just went through without so much as a groan, I wouldn't have been able to do that. Whether I could trust Anastaria or not no longer mattered. By her actions, Anastaria deserved to be respected. Yes, that's the word. I really started to respect her as a person and not just some girl with a cute face. Now I just needed to be careful not to let this respect grow into something more. Our weight classes were just too far apart, after all.
"Man, let's go."
Ants in the Pantsa once again brought me back to myself. I'll have to remember to do something nice for her after all this.
Anastaria will respawn as good as new. We have to get back to the glade.
Ensign Lepanza, can I ask you something? I said, as soon as we were back under the protection of the Guardian.
Just call me Natalie. My gaming name is a bit of a mouthful, so those who know me use the other name. So, shoot.
Can you tell me how you found out that the shaman's initiation could be completed in a non-standard way? I'm asking because before I thought that the inexplicable feelings that arise within me on various occasions were something only I experience. But it turns out that you felt something, too. I wish I could get to the bottom of all this. Otherwise, I'm feeling a bit lost.
Hold on. You, the owner of a unique totem, who has an acute perception of the surrounding world, have no idea what it means to be a shaman?
Before your rather emotional exclamation just now, I thought I knew what it meant to be a shaman. Now I'm not so sure. Will you tell me about it?
Do you know Kalatea?
The girl was on a roll.
No? You should. And you're not a member of the Order of the Dragon, are you?
She continued to bombard me with questions. Not a member of what? Listen, I think I told you that I only became a shaman half a year ago, having spent half of that time in a mine where I didn't really use any of my shaman skills. I have no idea who or what you're talking about now. I asked you because you really helped me out when I was going through the initiation. Now, this incomprehensible matter with this stupid intuition or premonition remains. I thought you might know what this is. And now you're trying to scare me with some galanteria and orders of the dragons.
Kalatea.
What's the difference? Who the heck is she anyway? Or he, even?
It's a she. A lady shaman, level 360. She's not in Malabar, but in Astrum, the empire that lies on one of the neighboring continents. The Order of the Dragon is an association of shamans headed by her.
An association of shamans? I thought this wasn't a particularly popular class.
That's right. On our continent, that is. But in Astrum, players choose it quite often. It is part of their cultural heritage, after all, and it's held in high esteem there.
I think I've lost you there. Can you start again, but in more detail?
I can start again, smiled Ensign Lepanza. No one would believe this if I told them. A 3-month-old shaman who managed to get a dragon and can make active use of his abilities has no idea about the Order of the Dragon. So, the shaman class appeared in Barleona just over 10 years ago, precisely because players from both the Americas started to petition the corporation to introduce it. For the first 2 years, shamans could only be created in Astrum. Kalatea was the first player who managed to complete the initiation in the path of the shaman. Essentially, this class was especially created with her in mind. Kalatea was actively involved in the design of the abilities and development of the class quests. She was offered a job in the corporation but refused, preferring to remain an ordinary player. But even now, the developers often ask her for advice on various aspects of shaman gameplay. By the way, she's the only player Harbinger in Barleona.
Hold on. I read the manual. There are no Harbingers.
Not in Malabar. The manuals are focused only on the continent from which the information request was made. So, we have Kalatea. That gal founded the Order of the Dragon, the Association of Shamans, joining which is every shaman's dream. I was only accepted there on my third attempt to join.
Twice I've failed my initiation, and each time I had to delete my character and start all over. Only after I was given the chance to choose my totem did Calatea agree to take me in. By the way, she's the one who receives new members personally, not one of her officers.
You've deleted your shaman twice in order to complete the trial correctly?
Yep. When I created the third one, I didn't think I'd make it through, so I gave her this name. When I did complete it, my first impulse was to delete again and recreate with a normal name this time, but Bussy turned out to be such a sweetie, I didn't have the heart to delete her, so I had to stay as Ants in the Pansa. Oh, by the way, let's level up our totems while no one's around. They will grow faster wrestling with each other than hunting down smaller mobs.
I think that's a great idea, I agreed, and summoned Draco. I told him what was up and sent him to fight the Black Panther. I just hoped he wouldn't leave too many burn marks on her with his acceleration. So what happened next? Calatea founded the association and became a harbinger. What has intuition got to do with it?
A lot. As I said, in both Americas, there is already an established image of a shaman, this trickster with a tambourine who is tuned in to the surrounding world. I can't tell you all that much, since it is forbidden, but I can give you a rough idea. Did you notice how the premonition only works when you interact with the surrounding world and not with other players? Today, for example, when we were choosing the direction in which to go. Aside from the east side, which contained those who summoned the ash, all the others were blocked, and blocked at the level of scenario at that. So our class was lucky with its founder. Calatea managed to convince the developers that the shamans should also be given a slight, almost imperceptible feeling of disquiet when they are doing something incorrectly. After all, this is possibly the only hybrid class. The developers scratched their heads and, together with premonition, added the spirit summoning mode, not to make things too easy for us. At the same time, they have calibrated the perception of the system warnings in such a way that if you don't use them or ignore them, they become weaker and weaker until one day they disappear altogether. Every 6 months, the Order of the Dragon carries out a re-examination of its members to find out whether they follow their intuition or not. This was the corporation's gift to Calatea for her contribution to the development of the game. Aside from shamans, only paladins have anything of the sort, but I don't know much about it. You should ask your girl. She would know.
My girl? It was a good thing I was already sitting down, or I would have dropped where I stood. Whom do you mean?
Anastaria, of course.
Ants in the Pansa gave me a strange look.
Am I wrong?
No, it's not like that. I would have been lost for words to express how I felt. Bloody hell! Someone actually thinks that Anastaria is my girl. A year ago, I would have given half of all I owned to hear that.
We are just good acquaintances who have mutually beneficial dealings with one another.
But a couple? Let's get back to shamans.
Well, that's all I have, pretty much. I'll tell Calatea about you today. I'm sorry, but I must do that. That's in our rules. So you should expect an invitation to a meeting in the next couple of weeks.
Natalie fell silent and began to watch our totems dueling. Despite being 3 times smaller than Bussy, Draco won every 4th battle. By the looks of it, as soon as his intensification cooldown expired, he activated his ability and flooded the poor cat in fire. It was interesting to watch a dragon letting the panther ride on his back while trying to bite one of her legs, but I was preoccupied by a different matter. In particular, what the girl said about intuition, that these feelings that popped up on various occasions were triggered via the system. And there was me thinking that I was something else, that I was on the path to becoming a super player. But it turned out that there were more of these players in Barleona than you could shake a stick at, that there were even harbingers out there. Natalie, can you tell me if your intuition has ever let you down? Have you ever had instances when you trusted it, but the result was not what you expected? Of course. This was the main requirement of the corporation in order not to end up with unstoppable monsters instead of shamans. Usually, about 80% of the premonitions don't have any meaning behind them. Moreover, aside from being beset with this white noise, we also have incorrect instincts generated for us. These begin from level 100, so you shouldn't worry about it yet. Otherwise, yes, about half of what we intuit is wrong. With situations like today, you can see straight away that it's the real deal, so that's straightforward. But the rest? You constantly have to level up in spirituality in order to keep things on the right level. I hope that's one of the stats that you chose, yes?
Yep.
Good. It'll come in very useful. Listen, I have a question for you now. Why do you need me on this quest? I wouldn't argue that it suits me very well, which is why I dropped everything in Anhurs and headed out here, but I don't get what shamans have to do with it. It was clear that today a spell was used against us, not spirits, so it's not like we can really make a difference here. How can I explain this? If I let myself be guided by your words, the system whispered in my ear that this is categorically impossible without shamans. I would even summon Calatea here, if I could, to have a fuller team. When you write to her, say, Mayan is inviting you to join him on a quest. I can't explain it, but it cannot be completed without shamans. You do know about Garenika, the new Lord of Shadow. He's a shaman. So what? What do Garenika and the Lord of the Dark Forest Cursed Ones have to do with one another? Who knows? But I can guarantee that they are connected in some way. Guardian, I addressed the silent tree. I have two questions. Would you mind answering them? I took the silence to be a sign of agreement and continued. Why was I struck down with debuffs if you said that nothing can harm me on this ground? And do you know Garenika?
10 years ago, a few days before my death, replied the guardian after a few moments, using its favorite vibrations. A sentient by that name came to the Dark Forest. He asked me to teach him about Ishni, but I refused him. The shaman left, but 2 days later a caravan entered the forest that brought the curse with it. I've heard nothing more about Garenika.
What is an Ishni? I asked straight away, ignoring the fact that the guardian failed to answer my first question.
Ishni is not a what. Ishni is the heart of my forest. She is my unicorn.
Chapter 7. The Black and White. Natalie, can you tell me if this is the right way to level up my totem? I asked the lady shaman, as soon as Draco's allotted time in this world had run out. In a couple of hours of fighting with Bussy, the dragon's level had increased by an entire point, reaching 38. At this pace, I'll be leveling him up until Chinese Easter, whatever that's supposed to mean. I'm doing something wrong, and a fellow shaman might have an idea what that is.
What do you mean by the right way? Do you mean fighting?
Of course, replied Ants in the Pantsa with surprise, and then continued, sounding less sure.
Although I might be mistaken. Why, do you have some ideas about this? I don't think I can remember any specific articles on the subject from Kalatea.
Hold on, I'll be a moment.
The girl's eyes glassed over, indicating that the player had logged out. I returned to my program of ingot-making when I realized just how alone I was once Natalie left me with no one but the prince around. I had used the 2 hours during which the totems were vying to see who was stronger on crafting. When I bought the ore, I didn't really think of the fact that leveling up in jewelcraft would require ingots and that I would still have to make them. My level of smithing allowed me to smelt tin, and I didn't have far to go until bronze, but that distance still had to be covered. Keeping in mind that I could only level up in jewelcraft by making things out of silver, gold, and iron, and that silver ingots only became available from level 60 in the profession, something told me that I was looking at a toilsome and vigorous grind ahead of me to level up. I could only place my hopes in the boost the Guardian's Glade would give me. In the 2 hours I had left before it was due to expire, that is. Once again cursing myself that I omitted to switch on my brain in Pryke and level up smithing virtually for free there, I continued to wear out the smelting pot. After explaining who Ishni was, the Guardian had clammed up and was now completely refusing to talk. As soon as his petrification debuff wore off, the prince, who was dutifully sitting inside the tent when it had all happened, came out and asked me to remove all the other debuffs from him. I summoned a restoration spirit and felt like going over and banging my head against the yoke for completely forgetting about Slate until now. Earlier, when the high-level players began to arrive and I was reforming the group, the prince completely slipped my mind. I sent him the invite and tried to talk him into temporarily returning to Anhur's. I was really reluctant to risk a life that was so dear to the princess. Even if Slate wasn't a standard NPC, you might even say he was a key scenario mob, something irreversible still might happen to him, such as his imitator unexpectedly hitting early retirement. For that, Tisha would lynch me, then reanimate me and lynch me again. The future Prince of Malabar carefully listened to my arguments, even agreeing with some, and then gave me such an earful that if he were Tisha's real husband, I would have been immediately kicked out of Malabar. So I had to take the risk and keep him with us, making a note to ask Anastaria to secretly look after him, just in case.
"Mayan,"
Natalie returned after about 30 minutes, giving me enough time to raise my smithing to 36. And that was with the current speed of professional leveling up. Still too slow, really. The system looked favorably on my diligent ingot smelting and rewarded me with 6 pieces of lapis. That meant 3,000 gold for each, if I remembered the prices right. Not bad at all. But I was rather downcast upon consulting the manual. The next set of chess figurines needed alexandrite, obtained by smelting silver, which, as it now became clear, was still a long way off. I had to find a way of speeding up.
"The Order of the Dragon has no guides on leveling up totems, and Kalatea simply chuckled when I called her and asked about the correct way of working with them. This can mean only one thing. I've been using the wrong method to get Bussy to level 120. "Damn," cursed Ants in the Pantsa. "Why didn't I think of this before?" Right. It will take around 9 more hours for everyone to respawn, so I'll log out for a bit. Need to have a chat with other shamans. I'll find out how they do it. I've mentioned you to Calatea, by the way, and she asked you to contact her. Here's her visor number. You can contact her there. She's expecting your call.
I can't give her a call, I said, noting down the number just in case in my notebook. It just so happens that I have no access to visors for the next 8.5 years.
Then use the phone. What's the difference? Asked Natalie, surprised.
You don't understand. I don't have access to phones either. You see, I'm currently in a prisoner capsule. My rights are restricted, and I won't be free for quite some time yet.
As soon as I uttered the key word prisoner, Ants in the Pants's face froze. Seems our society has instilled certain attitudes really well in us. It's good to be good, and it's bad to be bad. And to hell with tautology, you can't hide the truth. People aren't too tolerant of prisoners in our world. The dregs of society, social outcasts, the disgrace of the human race. I've had enough chance to hear all kinds of labels in my time.
I'm sorry,
uttered Natalie, after she finally finished wrestling with her prejudices.
I didn't mean to offend you.
Listen, just hold off slapping me on the ignore list. Let me tell you who I am and what I'm doing time for, and then you can decide what to do. So it all began when I painted a colorful picture of how I ended up in Barleona in this capacity and tried to emphasize the fact that I had an agreement with Marina, that I thought I was working with a test imitator, and that I handed myself in as soon as I found out the consequences of my actions. It was a really good thing, after all, that my fighters and I had our red headbands removed. Judging by Ants in the Pants's reaction, the majority of the players see convicts purely as convicts, lawbreakers, and not as people who had been successfully rehabilitated at the mines. It was even surprising that Elenium, Sushio, and Duki took the information that I and the other clan members were ex-prisoners from Pryke so well. To be honest, I expected worse.
"I'm sorry,"
muttered Ants in the Pantsa, this time looking embarrassed. Was I wrong, or did she go red in the face?
"It was just so unexpected. The terror of the collectors. I will be sure to read up on you today and tell Calatea that you are somewhat out of reach.
Natalie, before you run off, can you tell me if your senses have also been turned on? You looked embarrassed, your face reddened, and this can't happen with the filters on."
"Of course they're off."
Ants in the Pantsa looked perplexed.
"Who would agree to spend over 3 or 4 hours a day in this world without feeling all it has to offer? Taste? Smell? I'm not Anastaria, of course, and wouldn't set pain at 30%, but I've raised even that to 10% to keep my reactions sharp. I was even permitted to increase my neutral and positive sensations to the full 100. Are you saying that before prison, you played with all the senses turned off?"
"Yep," I said, trying to keep my jaw from hitting the floor. "I read about the senses and several times almost went to the center to unlock them, but each time I was stopped by a reluctance to feel pain. Nowhere did I read that you could split the activated senses between pain and pleasure. I used to follow the topic quite closely. This wasn't the case 6 months ago."
"You're right about the division of senses. This is a new feature introduced by the corporation. Just 3 months ago, all the capsules were replaced, practically for free. Until that time, the senses were combined.
Feeling pleasure and pain came as part of the same package, but now it's all been separated. "Why are you blushing?" asked Ants in the Pantsa, when my gaming avatar went rather red in the face. "Anastaria. That time she tried to use the siren's poison on me, and I explored her all over with my hands, thinking that she couldn't feel a thing. So it looks like the revulsion expressed on her face at the time wasn't from what she was seeing, but from what she was feeling. Damn, I've made such a fool of myself. Until the Guardian's Glade stopped providing the profession's bonus, I managed to get my smithing up to 42. I couldn't get any further on tin alone. To make bronze ingots, I needed copper, all of which I had handed over to Eric. No Eric, no copper. The copper vein, which was doing its best to attract me and get me to swing my pick at it, failed to generate much enthusiasm. I had no desire left to work whatsoever. After I repaired all the items I could, leveling up repair to 5, I lay down under the Guardian and started to read Theodore's book. One shouldn't leave a source of free stats like this untapped.
"Hello, Mayan. Listen, we need to talk."
A little later, Elenium appeared in the Guardian's Glade. The players that were sent for respawn were going to start turning up any minute now, so it was good that my solitude should be broken first by someone from my own clan. "Of course. Did you manage to take that long holiday?"
"Yes. I will be in the game for the next 2 weeks. This is what I wanted to talk to you about. You see, I did something stupid. Really stupid."
"What do you mean?"
"Do you remember the High Priestess taking me aside?"
"Of course I do. I just haven't had time to corner you and get you to tell me what that was about. You were given some kind of a class-based quest, right? Since you've brought it up already, do tell. Although, stop. Are you saying that you've already managed to break some condition of that quest?"
"No, the conditions are just fine. It's just... damn... I'll have to tell you this one way or another. I shared it with Phoenix, and they offered me good money and a place in their clan for the quest," blurted out Elenium, and then sighed in relief. "I'm sorry, but I have to think about my family, so potential big money in the future is worth less to me than good money right now."
"Come again? I'm not getting you at all." I shook my head in incomprehension. Sergei had said something using apparently everyday language, but the meaning was completely eluding me.
"I offered the quest to Phoenix. Got an offer to join their clan," said Elenium slowly, trying not to look me in the eye. "And I accepted."
"When?" As it finally sunk in that what I'd just heard wasn't the fruit of my fevered imagination, my brain went numb. What does it mean that he gave away the quest and went over to Phoenix? Does this mean he's ditching me? It just doesn't make sense. Of all things, you wouldn't expect a stitch-up like that from Elenium.
"Last night, when Anastaria got here, and you hid under the dome with her, I came over to Rick and showed him the quest description. I told you, I messed up. I should have talked with you first, but it's Phoenix, after all. Rick passed it on to Raster, their head of player recruitment, who contacted me today and asked me some questions. To be honest, I never thought that something like that could happen, but you know what being in Phoenix would mean to me. So I answered honestly about the circumstances under which I got my quest chain, and then agreed to go through their tests. The test results were reviewed by Hellfighter himself, and he's offered me a place as a support group fighter. Not a recruit, a fighter, right away. But he did it under the condition that I should leave Sea Thistles today, and in no way give the description of my quest to you. He's right. It's only open to priests, and I can't share it with any other class, so... Whew, I'm sorry, but this invitation means far too much to me.
Sergei, didn't we want a clan of our own?
I had to force the words out.
How can all this crazy talk be true?
Then, I completely understand what you're trying to say, but you have to understand me, too. There's my wife and kid and a stable salary for 4 compulsory hours online with Phoenix, on the one hand, and you, a bunch of convicts, and some unintelligible salary from my contribution to the clan, on the other. There's no way that I can sit in Barleona 24/7, so my contribution to the clan would be minimal. This means that I wouldn't earn enough even to pay the subscription, let alone enough to keep a family. I'm not prepared to leave reality for Barleona completely, so Phoenix's offer to me was, I need hardly say,
Sergei, are you sure? Look how the top players are dancing around Sea Thistles, handing over piles of money. We have enough additional quests to earn us a whole load more. It'll all work out.
I know all that very well. Stop trying to persuade me like I'm a little kid. It's not the clan those top players are dancing around. It's you. Once you're gone, everything else is gone too. The risks are just too great. What'll happen to the clan if you end up back in the mines? Do you know how hard it was for me to make this decision? But that's the decision I've taken, and I'll stick with it, come what may. My entire life as a player, I've been dreaming of being accepted into Phoenix, and now, when I've finally been given the opportunity, I can't let it slip away.
Do you realize that what you're doing is called a common stitch-up? I was counting on you, and you quit the moment a lucrative opportunity beckoned.
Sergei, I never expected something like that from you. Perhaps Dookie or Sushio, but you...
Well, since you brought them up, I asked Raster if there's a chance they would be accepted into Phoenix too. If I'm right, they're going through testing as we speak.
What?
That's right, said a deep, chesty voice that for some reason women find so attractive. Although for me it became the embodiment of everything that was bad about Barleona. Hellfire in the flesh. But Elenium's got it wrong. They have already done the tests. Their results weren't as good as those of the priest, so I'm not prepared to offer them the role of fighters. But Raster said that they'll do fine as recruits, and will go through a second round of testing after proper training. Elenium, have you made your decision?
Yes, I agree to your terms.
Then no point putting things off. I need you to call on the Emperor as a witness that you haven't given Mayan the description of the quest. After that, I'm prepared to accept you into Phoenix. Those are the rules.
Let the Emperor be my witness,
Elenium called on the ultimate arbiter of Malabar, that I haven't given the description of the class-based quest chain I received from the High Priestess to anyone other than members of the Phoenix clan. A cloud of light immediately formed around Sergei and quickly dissipated without causing him any harm. The priest hadn't lied. The imitator confirmed that. They say that the developers have learned to use capsules as lie detectors, so that if you blabbed a secret outside the game, in reality, the system would still figure it out. But in all likelihood, these were probably just rumors. Otherwise, players would have kicked up a fuss a long time ago, protesting against such an intrusion in their private life.
"Welcome to the Phoenix Clan, fighter," uttered Hellfire, when, just a moment after the official confirmation, the symbol of the Flaming Chicken Clan appeared above Elenium's head. "Our head priest will contact you today and set out a leveling up schedule for you. Now, let me talk to Mayan."
"So what is it you're trying to achieve here?" I asked the hateful dwarf as soon as Sergei walked away. "Just don't bullshit me with a story about how you suddenly had a revelation that these three were prime examples of priestly, rogue, and necromancer genius."
"Why, Elenium really is a talented priest. It's a surprise that he hasn't tried to take our tests before. Mayan, you're wasting your time looking for some malicious ulterior motive where there is none. My task is to make the Phoenix Clan stronger and poach the very best players from all the other clans, preferably doing as much as possible to destroy these clans in the process, leaving them no chance of catching up with us. Sea Thistles have been getting too much limelight all of a sudden. Every other person seems to be saying that a clan has emerged with none other than Johnson himself as a member. But I'm sure that you aren't him. This would be just too petty for him. You're nothing more than an ordinary player who's managed to get hooked into one scenario. And, as you've been riding that wave, the developers have managed to use you and all those near you for the subsequent scenarios so that they can have a sure shot at launching the update."
"That's all very informative, but it still doesn't explain what possessed you to start poaching my people."
"It seems that you didn't hear me. Mayan, please understand, this is not personal. For the Phoenix Clan, you represent the potential threat of losing out on good profit. Therefore, I've taken certain steps to counteract that."
"You do realize that now I'll stop involving Phoenix in any new quests."
"What quests? Mayan, get it through your head already. If you are removed from these scenarios, you will stop getting any more of them. Your decision to invite all of us to the cleansing of the Dark Forest was downright stupid. I can see that you've made a very good gain financially, but with subsequent developments, the times of Beatwick are over. Now, other continent-wide scenarios will be coming into play, one of which was given to Elenium and, consequently, to Phoenix. Of course, I could have given you a blank face and simply told you to take a hike, but I decided to explain everything to avoid any misunderstandings. That's something we can do without. People can take offense and start doing stupid things. You just can't be allowed to return to the mines right now. The Guardian's quest is tied to you, so for the time being, you're useful. But I'll tell you straight away, I will do everything I can to make sure Phoenix takes this quest off your hands. Perhaps you should quit being obstinate and accept my offer. The place of the Master of Phoenix is still waiting for you."
"No. I couldn't think of anything sufficiently offensive to unsettle Hellfire, so my answer was monosyllabic. "My apologies, Hanastaria, but from now on Phoenix is going on my ignore list. The whole clan."
"As you wish. Ah, there's Dookie and Sushio. Are you ready to accept my offer? You can see that Elenium has already made his decision," Hellfire said to the other players that had just arrived, and then turned to me and moved in for the kill. Not much point in me going after the three convicts. Those guys follow the code of honor amongst thieves and won't leave, Sea Thistles. I respect that, but you should know that I intend to talk with Barcina and take her with us as well. Man, I won't let your clan get off its knees.
As the Sea Thistles clan lost two more players, I finally understood that my previous life as a hunter had ended for good. Hellfire stood next to me for a little while, probably expecting me to explode in anger, but I remained deathly still. Snorting, the top dwarf of Malabar left me alone as I lowered myself to the ground. Can you describe pain? Can you describe complete disappointment? Can you describe the realization that no matter what you did, it would all be fruitless, because someone like Hellfire would turn up and simply buy all your fighters? If everything is so bad, what's the point in continuing to struggle and trying to make it to the top? My eyes closed, cutting off the colors of this world. I wished I had some way to block sound as well, but I had no scroll for doing that, like Anastaria. What if there's a spirit that can separate you from the surrounding world? I should dig around for one ASAP. Right now, I didn't give a damn that Hellfire was savoring his victory over me, and, consequently, my complete defeat at the hands of his legendary and unparalleled might. Right now, I needed to find a way of being alone. Spirit, where the heck are you? Are you sure that you want to leave this world and be transported to the astral plane? Astral plane? Well, what's the difference? If it's got to be the astral plane it is. I really didn't care anymore, even if I got sent back to the mines. What's the use of making plans for developing your clan if you have no way of ever getting them off the ground? I was counting on the free players so much that I was completely unprepared for such a move on their part. It was hard to wake up to the fact that the guys with whom you've played for well over 2 years are first and foremost people who could simply be bought, and then, most likely, sold on and thrown away, like useless junk, after all their potential is used up. Stop. How about I stop feeling sorry for myself? Maybe it's time for me to start showing my teeth and fighting for what's mine. Am I a shaman or a shy mouse when push comes to shove? Why am I behaving like a complete pushover? Oh, noes! Someone took a shit on me! Enough! I need to pull myself together and take this on the chin, or fight back with everything I've got. So Hellfire wants to destroy my clan, eh? He can dream on. That flame-grilled chicken douchebag is due for one hell of a comeuppance. Having made up my mind, I opened my eyes. There's no returning the ones who left, but Barcina will stay with me. You have to fight for your clan members. I don't get it. What happened to the Guardian's Glade? The surrounding world had transformed. The trees, the mist, the other players, and the Guardian had disappeared. Everything had vanished, even the ground. I ended up at the center of a sphere divided into two. One part consisted of unbearably bright light, and the other of frighteningly pitch-black darkness. Those designers sure know how to do visuals. Looking at just one of these half-spheres was enough to give you goosebumps. The only thing that didn't cause any discomfort was the gray line dividing the light from the dark, and that's where my gaze came to rest. The main thing was not to stand there wide-eyed, but figure out where the heck I'd ended up.
"You dared to enter our world, Elemental One," thundered the darkness, enveloping me in a terrible coldness.
"You aren't ready yet, Almost Great One,"
whispered the light, caressing me with its warmth.
"Where am I?"
I whispered, stupefied, and blinked a few times in the hope that all of this would stop and I would find myself back in the dark forest.
"You have entered the abode of the supreme spirits of the higher and lower worlds, Elemental One,"
thundered the darkness again, sweeping another wave of cold over me.
"You have entered a place of answers, Almost Great One."
The gentle sounds of light pushed back the darkness and rekindled my desire to keep playing. What if them voices come with a nifty buff or two?
"Man, where did you go? And, more importantly, how?"
An internal raid message from Echeler popped up in front of me, but I waved it away like some annoying insect. I had more important things to do than chat to those who would shortly be going on my ignore list. I finally had an opportunity to get some answers, but the unpleasant part was that I had no idea which questions I should be asking.
"You don't belong here yet, Future Great One," whispered the light a couple of seconds later. "We were watching our best student in Malabar, and were not expecting to meet another shaman entering the astral plane, unprepared and uninitiated. You should not have ended up here, and we will be more careful in the future, but we must atone for our mistake. You will receive an answer to any question. Ask."
"And," I began, but regained control of myself just in time and fell silent. If I asked any now, the answer I'd get would be, "Yes, but now you've used up your question." Now I could see who Almas and Cornick took after in the how-to-be-a-pain-in-the-neck department, none other than these supreme spirit dudes. But back to the matter in hand. If I have a chance to ask a question, there's no way I can let it slip away. I just have to decide what interests me the most. Should I ask about the Carmandant chess set? Like, can you give me the exact coordinates of the cave, for example? But what if it's not a cave? Or if you need a key to enter, that key being the chess set itself? Not much sense in asking this, then. I'll find that out from from Barcina, or any other player. To hell with Phoenix. Should I find out how to complete the trial to become a great shaman? I can ask Ants in the Pantsa that. Where hoards of gold might be hidden in Barleona? I'll be sent off to such a distant middle of nowhere that no amount of gold would make up for having to trudge there. And in any case, I have those two dragon treasures waiting for me, so I'm sorted on the loot front.
What then? What does it mean to be a shaman? What happened during the fight between Prontho and Shyam? Is Cornick alive? So many questions to which I'd love to get answers, but I can ask only one.
What is the source of Garanika's strength? I finally managed to articulate the question that was continuing to bother me. Ants in the Pantsa said that there was no answer, and Kalatea is unlikely to spill the beans, since she probably enjoys watching players explore various features she'd helped design for the shaman class. So this was a highly relevant matter. Keeping in mind that Garanika promised to do all kinds of pleasant things to me, any information on his capabilities would come in very handy. I could even trade it with Natalie on mutually beneficial terms.
"Oh, Supreme Ones, are you still here?"
When over a minute later no answer was forthcoming, I politely reminded them of my existence. Either the spirits have no idea, or...
"We cannot tell you this, because we do not know it ourselves," growled the darkness.
Looks like getting to the bottom of Garanika's strength is connected to some scenario quest, so the imitators can't leak this information before its time. The developers wouldn't permit this. Very interesting. A negative result is still a result.
The last time Guernica summoned a spirit was 20 years ago. From then on, he has been using something else.